gonna die, clown!
Now that's what I call high quality H2O.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn.
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the discerning Adam Sandler fan, the pod for the fan of the Sandman. I am your host, Wilson Smith, and joining me as always...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And Austin Colt.
I'm really excited to be with you for this extremely cool, very exciting episode of the Billy Gilmore Show. We are here, of course, you know, we continue our exploration into the deeper corners of the Happy Madison universe. You know, we are exploring the David Spade side of things. You know, we last episode was Joe Dirt, and we are, of course, moving on to Dickie Roberts, former child star, 2003's blockbuster number one release, Dickie Roberts, former child star. We'll get to that, and that's important. Even more important than that, we are here to talk about a very, very special event that finally, it's been a long time coming, and it's probably been in the works since before this podcast even existed. And we finally got to, experience the fruits of this. That's right. An Adam Sandler movie marathon at the Alamo Drafthouse. It was fantastic. And I'm really excited to talk about it with you guys and reminisce about that before we dive into this. Did we talk about this on a previous episode?
I think just with timing and everything, we might have not mentioned it simply because we couldn't really talk about it until we knew it was official. We didn't want to, speak too soon and then find out that it had to be rescheduled or canceled because, you know, hosting these things, getting it organized, getting these prints from different parts of the country, that can be a complicated process. So sometimes schedules do change. So we didn't want to, speak too soon, but thankfully it all worked out. And I don't know, I'd say like the theater was what, maybe 2/3 full. It wasn't a sold out show, but it was a good crowd.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It was and the crowd had a great time. They definitely seemed to respond to all the movies, and there wasn't like too much groaning. There didn't seem to be too much wailing and gnashing of teeth at some of the more sort of extreme mega Sandler movies. I don't know how else to categorize them, but
So like I think that's a good point because obviously, we host this podcast, so we are very, very, very much in the pocket for this stuff. We happily, passionately, artistically, and comedically defend the likes of Jack and Jill and Grown Ups 2, both of which were shown at this marathon yesterday. But are those going to be as easily embraced by maybe the more casual Sandler fan who grew up on the early stuff, but maybe didn't, never made it past, like the early aughts, say. But no, I think the audience reaction to, to like the real diehard stuff, like Jack and Jill and Grown Ups 2, like it was really, like really passionate and just people having had a good time, good vibes. There were like a few occasional groans, but those were reserved for those just kind of like, this is time's fault, not Sandler's fault moments. Like in Jack and Jill, when you see a cameo from Jared Fogle, there's a weird bit with the then Bruce Jenner, now Caitlin. There's like a few like fatty jokes sprinkled throughout these movies that, either 20 years ago, 25 years ago, which was The Wedding Singer, or, maybe like 10 years ago, where it just kind of slipped under the wire and you wouldn't really see those types of jokes anymore. So like there were like a few quote unquote un-PC gags throughout these movies that people didn't really groan at as much as like they just didn't laugh at.
Yeah.
Which I actually appreciated. Like I appreciate the fact that no one made a point to like show that they weren't like to like loudly demonstrate that they didn't, care for that fat phobic comic. They just, they showed their point of view with their silence, which is what you're supposed to do with comedy, which is fine. And the rest of the time we were just, I feel like everyone was just really vibing well together. And again, we can get into the specifics, but this was my first time seeing all of these films in a theater with an audience, all of them. So it was a really special day. But I want to stop rambling and hear from you guys. What was yesterday like for you? Like, what were your expectations? What were you feeling? I'm still riding on clouds from yesterday, and I think I will be for a while.
I was very happy with the response. I mean, I think, you know, going in knowing what these are, and then, like, I was in the bathroom and overheard someone, Wedding Singer started the day out. So it was like a comfortable, very, you know, maybe what you would have expected with this in the bathroom after that movie. I heard, I hope Waterboy is next. And we had a preview to the lineup where we knew that wasn't going to be the case, which I felt like Jack and Jill, like, you know, outside of Wedding Singer, which, you know, I think is going to go over well anywhere, anytime, whenever. I thought Jack and Jill went over really well.
Yes.
That audience really ate that up. That was probably the second most, like, people were into this one. And that's probably, I think all three of the click, in terms of like the number of watches among the people probably in there, I would imagine it was Wedding Singer, and then people had probably seen Click after that, and then probably hadn't seen Jack and Jill or Grown Ups 2.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dawson.
Oh, no, those were the fun ones to kind of see how people responded.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Jack and Jill, rightly or wrongly, is, you know, well, you know what, I think rightly probably is considered to be the, you know, the abrasive one out of that bunch. Like, that's for, like, the real ride or die Sandlers, because that movie is a lot. That movie is very specific. That movie is very shrill in some parts, just with what Sandler's up to and just its energy. It's so manic. Placing that second in the lineup yesterday, I thought was like a ballsy, beautiful move. Sort of like, all right, we all like we all, you know, felt nice and gooey and fun with The Wedding Singer because everyone loves that movie because it's perfect. Now let's see how serious you are about your fandom, just like throwing down the gauntlet immediately. But yeah, like, it played so well. You know, prior to yesterday, I had seen Jack and Jill, you know, a couple of times at home, probably a few times at Vulcan back in the day. Had never seen it with an audience, and it was kind of like watching it for the first time, and it played beautifully. There were like I was finding new laugh lines and gags that I never really appreciated before.
Just to be clear, it's almost certain that nobody in that theater had ever seen it in 35 millimeter before, because even if you'd seen it in a theater in 2011, you weren't watching it on film.
I'm shocked that they found a 35 print. That's an incredible thing. And, you know, and for as much shit as Dennis Dugan gets for, like, being, oh, it's just Sandler's rich friend. He sleepwalks through these directing jobs. But you know what? We watched two Dugans yesterday. We watched Jack and Jill and Grown Ups 2. And I thought both of them looked pretty swell. Like,
they're painterly in 35 millimeter.
The Wedding Singer was absolutely beautiful. I mean, yeah. I did see that one as a kid in theater, so I guess that would have been 35, but yeah. I mean, just can't overstate how good it looked and just how well it works on the big screen. Like, you kind of miss these details at home, maybe because you pick up your phone, or maybe you just can't, like, experience it in the same way. But just, I took away from that, like, man, the editing on this is incredible. It's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I saw Click. Click's the only one that I saw in theaters. And I'm thinking about, like, what, like, cause I, my local theater transitioned to digital projectors in the summer of 2006. And I think it happened after Click came out. And I saw Click opening weekend. So it's like 60-40 that I saw that movie on 35 millimeter already. But otherwise, like, yeah, I didn't see Jack and Jill or Singer or Grown Ups 2 in a theater. So it was beautiful.
And I'm really glad I brought that Wedding Singer, because I had that reaction as well. I knew prior that that was going to be one of the selections, and I was so stoked to see it finally on the big screen with an audience. And, you know, I've seen that movie probably upwards to 20 times at least, like second to Happy Gilmore. It's probably the Sandler I've seen the most. And there were just little bits, particularly, you know, one of the standout scenes in the movie when Robbie is playing for Julia, you know, like the song he's been working on. And he wrote half of it before Linda left him and the other half afterwards. And it's the whole, like, you know, somebody kill me, you know, great showstopper. And if you, I don't know, like I would almost want to show that scene after now watching on the big screen and just reacting to it with an audience. I would almost want to show that scene to like a young undergrad film student. Like here's a real simple, effective, like example of the simple power of like effective editing and shot composition and switching from like, let's say a medium wide to a close-up or vice versa. Cause like, you don't really think about it because the movie, that's not like a very showy movie. Frank Haraki, I don't think is a showy director, but that scene, especially just like the little shot transitions really punctuate every change in the song. And there's some great cutaways, like beautifully edited cutaways to Drew Barrymore's reactions and her emotional arc through listening to that song. I know I'm sounding like a little too jerk offy about this, but that movie plays so well and I was appreciating whole new subtleties to it. So it was awesome.
Well, don't worry. We have at least one more Frank Caracci film in our future because we still have to watch Kevin James's Zookeeper. He might've done Here Comes the Boom as well. So yeah, we've got some Caracci in our, on the horizon. But yeah, no, Austin, I have a question for you. I know you went to a couple or maybe all of those Nicolas Cage marathons, right?
I never went to any of those. I went to WrestleMania.
Really?
Which was...
Okay. Never mind. So I was going to ask you because for some reason I misremembered you going to one because I was going to ask if you had seen the year that they played The Wicker Man because that was what the reaction to Jack and Jill reminded me of. It was like the people who were there were sort of like primed for like, I don't know. There was a lot of like when the Dunkachino commercial started on Jack and Jill, the reaction in the theater was just like, they knew this part was coming. And that's what it was like. It very much reminded me of like the, like, oh, like that's become enough of a meme online that even people who I imagine were seeing Ruby for the first time, you know, they were like, oh, hell yeah, this is coming up. Like, this is going to be bonkers.
It's as much of like a buildup to that moment as it is to the buildup of the moment whenever the Celtics win the game in Uncut Gems. It just felt like it was going and going there, and people knew what was going to happen. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and like, that's the funny thing, and what I sometimes have told people about Jack and Jill to try to like sell them on it because the Dunkachino thing devoid of context has become this viral internet thing. The Nick Cage comparison is a good one, but the scene, as funny as it plays, just devoid of context, as just like this YouTube thing, it plays even better if you've seen the movie. It plays so much better if you have seen that. If you've seen the buildup to it, it is a perfect capper.
Seeing that movie particularly in theaters, because like yes, I really truly like every movie I loved watching. Like, you know, like Grown Ups 2 was such a blast and such a great way to cap it off. And like, you know, Click, I love that movie. Like, I unashamedly like dig the hell out of that flick, and so I'm glad I got to see that again in the theater. But like, Jack and Jill was truly the one where it was like that. It's like it all came together because that movie is. I had a film professor. I'm sure I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I had a film professor who said to me once, like, well, like one like signifier of a masterpiece is that it feels like every time you watch it, it feels like it's the first time you're encountering it again. And that's how Jack and Jill is. Like, watching it, it's like it's an unsolvable riddle. It's just. It's a bizarre, there's bizarre energy coming, like emanating from that movie. It's just like, you know, the groans that came up when Jared Fogle showed up, the, you know, just like, it's so weird and so like, yeah, as I said online, like if it, you know, if at the end, it, instead of Dennis Dugan, no disrespect to Dennis Dugan, but if at the end it said directed by John Waters, I wouldn't bat an eye. a beautiful experience. And we all got swag at the end. We got fantastic. It was the event was officially called Enter the Sandman. And so we got these awesome coffee cups, like travel coffee mugs that have Enter the Sandman. And on the other side, it's a Dunkachino in the Dunkin' Donuts font. So that's fun. I don't know. What's what else? Like they didn't have any trailers or anything like in between, except for Arthur Christmas.
Except for Arthur Christmas. Woo. Yeah, I love Grown Ups 2 so much. such a treat, those movies. And again, like I've heard this, like I've heard people make this like probably somewhat ironically or winking like on like Letterboxd or Twitter, but the climactic kind of like crazy frat douches versus Sandler and all of his pals like fight at the end is legit a very, very good movie fight. It's like that shit is super well done.
The Shaq moment where he just like bursts through the house and then grabs that guy and just throws him over the house. It's still as surprising as it was the first day I saw it.
Yeah, awesome. This must have been like sweet, sweet vindication for you because, you know, 10 years ago, like you were, I remember like day one, you were just like, yeah, Grown Ups 2, it's kind of like, it's pretty good actually. It's like American Graffiti. And I was like, uh-huh, sure, whatever, man. And then here we are. And it's just like, my God, you were right. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And I'm glad people were not upset to not have seen the first one in order, because that one movie you can just jump into, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but, no one's unfortunately, like, you know, the only thing that's going to happen if you've actually seen the first one is you're going to be distraught because you're going to be like, where's Rob Schneider? Like, I need Rob Schneider. Where is he? And he's not there.
And we only got him once, right? We got him in Click.
Yeah, we got him, Prince Habibu in Click. It was as usual, like a delicate and sensitive role, handled with aplomb by Mr. Schneider. he's been handling himself super well on social media lately.
Of course.
Yeah, no, I mean, and like, yeah, and you know, as the, you know, Jake, the, you know, who guested, you know, early on, you know, and on the Grown Ups 2 episode, you know, he said, like, this is the first marathon that the Draft House has done since the pandemic hit, which is also like quite an honor. And, you know, this had been brought up, like we had heard about this because, you know, it's Brian Connolly, you know, a frequent guest, friend of the pod, you know, had been programming this for several years and trying to get it done. And like, it was going to happen in, you know, May or June or whatever of 2020. And it, you know, of course the world ended. And, you know, so getting to like experience it, you know, sitting there with like, you know, friends and my girlfriend and my sister and like, we're, you know, just like, you know, eating popcorn, you know, drinking beer, watching the movies. Like it was, I needed that. It was a great day.
Very much. It felt just very, like, it felt simultaneously like an electric rock concert and like just a sweet summer barbecue, like in one of our backyards, because it was very validating to watch these movies and like not just Sandler movies, but like these Sandler movies, you know, with an audience and just watching them kill. That was very validating. And also it was just like, we all got to see each other and some of our old Vulcan pals, it was a whole big family affair. It was Grown Ups too for a whole day, like basically. And yeah, I'm really glad we got to do that. I think on one of your socials, Wilson, you said it's one of the, you know, best movie going experiences you've had in years. And I would definitely agree with that. It's definitely, it's most certainly a memory I will cherish.
Yeah. And definitely shout out to Brian Cobbs and, you know, his lovely wife, Liza. Brian obviously has been a guest on the show. You know, Brian Connolly, obviously, Jake Isgar. obviously. Yeah, it was a great turnout.
For sure.
Yeah.
Our buddy Spencer from Vulcan.
Oh yeah.
Kristen, of course. Yeah, it was a whole family friend affair, and yeah, I felt very grateful to be a part of it.
Yeah, it felt like kind of even the people I did know in the audience were all just super friendly. I mean, I wore my I cried during Click shirt, and I got a few moments of people just being like, great shirt. So
that's right.
They were all, everyone in there was like super nice, and it felt kind of like a unique secret club we were in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Enough for people to be like down for Jack and Jill and Grown Ups too, and like not lose that, like to like not be lost on that. It's like that's fantastic. Yeah, I had a Happy Gilmore Boston Bruins hockey jersey on, and my lovely girlfriend Lauren got me some for Christmas, or maybe it was my birthday actually, got me some golf shorts that have Chubbs teaching Dick Happy Gilmore how to putt. embroidered into the fabric, and so I was wearing those and my best basketball shoes in honor of the Sandman.
And if you know the Alamo Draft House, they always do specials, like food specials or drink specials. So they did a drink special for this. It was a free H2O water boy water, as much as you want, unlimited
all day, high quality H2O.
That's right.
Yeah, it was spectacular. Yeah, one of the best camping going days. There goes my dog coughing. But yeah, I don't know. Anyone, I mean, before we move on to Dickie Roberts, former child star, anything else to mention I hope we get to do it again. That would be the dream.
Absolutely.
We got to get out there and shout out, you know, Brian and Jake were kind enough to have us up there. And so, you know, any of you out there who happen to be listening to this episode, you know, if you're new to the pod, thanks for listening. You know, we got a deep back catalog. But it was nice to sort of get some promotion in there as well, you know, while we were there.
It was fun to see the moments too that people just kind of like broke out in cheers, like the first movie was Wedding Singer, which does not include Happy Madison intro. So the first time in Jack and Jill that shows up, crowd went wild.
Yeah.
Then Norm MacDonald shows up, crowd went wild.
Yes. And honestly, that was one of like, you know, like the whole day was pretty much perfect. But if I had to like make like a top five, just kind of like moments where I felt particularly, you know, touched, or just, you know, or if my funny bone was touched or whatever, like just people's reaction to Norm, just clapping and cheering for our dearly, you know, departed hero. That was great. And, you know, and that was just nice to, you know, share with a dark room full of people, because we're just about a year now since he passed and we miss him very much. So that was cool.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Those were great moments. You know, in addition to all the like weird, like discomforting moments in general, and the fact that part of it takes place in the ET forest.
So weird.
It's so weird. And like, okay, like not to get sidetracked, but of course that fucking car, like that, like the car spinning around in the middle of the road in Jack and Jill, it's like they had like it, like that's one of the things that makes the movie so great, is that like they just had so much fuck you money, and they like they spent it in the weirdest ways.
I feel like, and I can just refer back to our Jack and Jill episode, but watching it again just on a screen with you know, people around me, like I really appreciated little moments like that all the more, especially the car bit. Like that movie's relationship to the tangible world is so is so strange. I mean, it's maybe the closest thing he's done to like Billy Madison in terms of just like almost avant-garde insanity, but it's a different sort of energy too. It's kind of hard to describe. Like, as you said earlier, Wilson, like the more you try to wrap your head around it, like the tighter the knots are going to be. So I shouldn't even try, but
yeah, that's a great way of putting it. It's definitely an enigma. It's a mystery wrapped inside of an enigma.
That's right.
And, you know, it's a riddle. And I'm glad that we all were there to sort of ponder it, like, you know, like in a Zen sort of way, like it emptied our minds. It was fantastic. All right. So I guess without further ado, shall we move on, gentlemen, to, you know, back into the continuity of the podcast. We're back into David Spade land. We never came up with a catchy title for this, like Into the Schneiderverse.
Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades. There you go. Call a spade a spade. Didn't sound right. I'm not sure what that means or connotates. So I will stay away
from that. Ace of Spades is fine.
Yeah, Ace of Spades is great. Speaking of Ace of Spades, David Spades. We previously on the podcast reviewed Joe Dirt, the definitely cult classic David Spade vehicle that, you know, is such a cult classic that, you know, it played endlessly on Comedy Central and years later spawned a critically beloved sequel, Joe Dirt 2, for Crackle. It was Crackle exclusive. We are here today to talk about Praise Barry, you'll find out, 2003's Sam Weissman-directed effort, Dickie Roberts' former child star. You might not have seen this one. I kind of doubt that you would have seen this one, considering that even though it was a number one hit at the American box office, I couldn't find when they were like, since when this stat was like dating from. But essentially, I remember, and Austin, we talked before recording, Austin also remembers that this film was talked about upon release as the lowest grossing number one opener in like years and years, maybe like decades. I can't remember. It was like a 6 million opening weekend.
Yeah, this was 2003. And yeah, I remember whenever Spider-Man came out in 2002, it like really caught my eye because I was like starting to get really into film and saw that box office and like started tracking the box office. And I just remember come September 2003, they were like, Dickie Roberts, number one, lowest grossing number one movie ever.
Congratulations, David Spade. Even in victory, you are defeated. You know, odd man out. Although, again, Joe Dirt, huge cult classic. But
and that's probably changed now due to COVID number ones at box office.
Yeah, which was the only reason why in the past few years I've had cause to think of Dickie Roberts, where something like, you know, the Russell Crowe vehicle Unhinged opens with like a $3 million gross at number one, and no other movie makes even close to $1 million. And it's just like, oh, right. Like that's, you know, that's even lower than Dickie Roberts.
Yeah. So Dickie Roberts is now the 51st worst. The 50th is Tenet.
Why? What a great stat. Thank you for finding that.
I guess this is looking at week to week, but yeah. So whatever week, September 11th, 2020, Tenet was just barely better than Dickie Roberts.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm sure Christopher Nolan was, you know, he got a decent night's sleep that night because at least we beat Dickie Roberts. You know, if we'd been below the Dickie Roberts threshold, you know, I might have to kill myself, but yeah, what a, you know, inauspicious. The budget was $17 million. And to be fair, movies didn't live or die solely on their opening weekends to such a degree back then. The film did close out with like $23 million in the States, which like on a $17 million budget, it's not great. But like, I'm sure that the movie cleaned up on DVD. Like, I'm sure it did well in rentals and DVD sales. And that was definitely like right in the sweet spot of physical media and like, you know, home video rentals and sales being like a secondary market. I've obnoxiously bragged to y'all, you know, recently, I got this movie at Half Price Books in a pristine, factory sealed, never before opened DVD for $4.99. And that's what I watched today. There's over 3 hours of special features on this DVD.
Did it have any good trailers?
No, just the trailer for Dickie Roberts, former child star.
Can I give a real quick piece of trivia about Dickie Roberts that I just kind of realized, but I think it bears mentioning. So the director of Dickie Roberts, former child star, is a gentleman named Sam Weissman.
Yep.
Now, he's directed a few duds prior to Dickie Roberts, like What's the Worst That Could Happen with Martin Lawrence and Danny DeVito. I remember seeing that in theaters and like even at the age of like 12 being like, Jesus, this is bad. He directed The Out-of-Towners with Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn. No one really remembers that. But very important to at least my childhood and perhaps to y'all's as well, he directed D2, The Mighty Ducks and George of the Jungle. And those were both very, very special to me at a young age. So I really got to, with all honesty, give it up to this guy because many, 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 many hours were spent watching both of those movies. George of the Jungle was my first ever DVD.
Yeah, and I guess, I forget if Keenan had been on, because Keenan's in D2, right?
Yeah, Keenan first shows up in D2. I don't know if that would have predated like all that, but it was most certainly around like the same time. Like that had to have been within a year or two of all that.
Oh man, I wish I could find this Dickie. Well, there isn't. Oh, it's down. The Dickie Roberts website, when they launched it, according to this, it had a Where Are They Now video poker game, which I guess you could just play with the former child stars. That would have been a lot of fun.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, it's a shame it wasn't kept up for posterity like the Space Jam website. So this movie was, of course, yeah. Really, I love George of the Jungle growing up. That I was never huge into the Mighty Ducks movies. Like they just weren't like part of my childhood as much as other people's. But George of the Jungle, I wore that shit out. Yeah, and Brendan Fraser is great in that movie. And met his wife. Is it coincidental that we're talking about Brendan Fraser and his wife? Who knows? maybe he'll come up later. Why not? Apparently this started as like an idea. This is Fred Wolf wrote the script like he did for Joe Dirt, and like Strange Wilderness, and he directed The House Bunny and Strange Wilderness and Joe Dirt 2, I believe. So he's definitely like David Spade writing partner. It concerns the travails of Dickie Roberts, former child star. Is there a colon in the title? Is it Dickie Roberts colon former child star or just Dickie Roberts former child star?
IMDb says a colon.
Okay. Well, I'll take their word for it. And he was in a sitcom in the 70s called The Glimmer Gang, where he had kept the memorable catchphrase, this is knuckin' futs. I do sort of question the notion that that could be like that would not be seen as like too risque in like the 70s on like, network TV, but fine, I'll go with it. It's a funny joke. And of course, his mother, played by Doris Roberts, playing Peggy Roberts, right? It's Peggy. Doris is playing Peggy, mother to Dickie Roberts. So lots of Robertses already. She describes like taking him to auditions as a kid and like he's Pippi, like he got the part as Pippi Longstocking, like dressing him up as a girl. Basically he became like famous with the Glimmer Gang and then like other child actors of that era and later eras, he sort of fell to seed and is now one of my favorite details early on in the movie is when they say that like, oh, there's a rumor that his father is David Soul, who played Hutch on Starsky Hutch. And I really love, it's like, oh, like he became more known for his idiosyncratic behavior, like wearing gloves, always wearing gloves. He changed his name to David Soul's son. And when he got tired of explaining who David Soul was, he changed his name to Hutch's son. I don't know. I just thought that was a really good gag. It doesn't come up like more often, but that was a good joke. And then he like changes it to like elements of the periodic table. So yeah, and we the credits of the movie open on, they play over him doing like a celebrity boxing match against Emmanuel Lewis.
Yes.
So yeah, so he fights against Emmanuel Lewis, he gets his ass kicked by Emmanuel Lewis, and
as any good movie has, Michael Buffer is also in there to as the ring announcer.
That's a great point, Austin. I'm glad you bring that up. Michael Buffer, is cause of one of the most like baffling moments I've ever had in a movie theater in my adult lifetime. Austin, you might know what I'm about to say. I think so. In watching Tim Burton's live action remake of Dumbo, Michael Buffer at the end introduces Dumbo, the attraction, and goes, "Let's get ready for Dumbo." One of the most bizarre. I was like, "What? That can't. That, there's no way that actually happened." I'm still kind of unconvinced that it did. So it was, you know, it was a treat to see him again. So yeah, he gets his ass kicked. He's a pathetic loser. He works as a valet, parking cars, at a local restaurant. And he has like a poker game every week with like a bunch of other child stars. Let's see, his child actor friends are Corey Feldman, Leif Garrett, Dustin Diamond.
The late Dustin Diamond, yeah.
Dustin Diamond and Danny Bonaducci. Oh, that's right. I forgot Dustin Diamond died.
Yeah. And well, just a very quick aside, because it's there's a very brief mention of Leif Garrett in the Chris Farley oral biography that's not very flattering. Like, he's kind of mentioned in passing as just one of the sort of like enabling sort of like celebrity adjacent kind of partiers that was just egging Farley on, and like during like the last days, when it's too depressing to even mention, and that's a whole other can of worms that we don't need to get into. But if there was any bad blood there, I guess it was put aside between him and Spade. but yeah, that was a weird thing that I remembered as I saw him in Dickie Roberts. Like, oh yeah, no, like he doesn't come off very flattered, like flattering in the Farley book. But okay, you know, that was a long time ago. Now that I brought everyone down, let's get back to Dickie Roberts.
I do like in this scene how is it Barry Williams that just keeps pulling out all these Brady Bunch items to like keep in the game. Like, I've got this, the braces, they're worth $2 or something.
I gotta say, I think he's like severely, it sounds to me like he's severely undervaluing those items. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, like here's like a genuine like insert, like miniature replica of the tiki idol from the like the, when the episode when they go to Hawaii. And it's like, oh, that'll definitely fetch at least $8 on eBay. I'm like, bro, you might sell that for several thousand dollars. Like, come on, don't just. I guess like he should know his worth.
I like how pleasantly low key and good natured, like all of these celebrity cameos are in this movie. Like, Dickie Roberts is 90 minutes from the top down of everyone just being a good sport. I feel like.
Yeah, no, the vibes are good in this movie. That's definitely, we should say that up front. Like, this is not like a tough, like, you know, like the Benchwarmers, like, I don't know, like that was sort of a rough recent movie where I was like, there's just kind of like barely a movie here. Like, it's just sort of barely there. Like, something like Dickie Roberts, like goes down very smoothly.
Yes, indeed.
And it felt like this moment and these moments felt very Happy Madison like.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, we were talking about Jack and Jill earlier, and there's all those celebrity cameos within that of them living within this world. And so this just felt kind of reminds me most of Sandy Wexler, maybe.
For sure. And John Lovitz, his agent name is Sidney Wormack. So I thought, you know, sounded close enough to Sandy Wexler. We forgot to mention Alyssa Milano is in this movie. So after Celebrity Boxing, basically like their car breaks down on the side of the road and she's just like, you know, you're a loser, you suck, like you're never gonna have that comeback, and like you should just like sell your autobiography that you keep saying you're gonna write or that you're writing. And the car that they're like fixing the tire on like flips down into the canyon, and she like gets a hitchhike, she hitchhikes with a dude and like gets a ride away from him. And that's the last we see in the movie, or is it? So Dickie hears about from his buddy Leif Garrett. Leif?
I think it's Leif.
Okay, Leif Garrett. He hears about this new the hottest new movie script in town. And it's something called Mr. Blake's Backyard. And it's going to be directed by, of course, the hottest director in the game, like top dog of the Hollywood food chain, Rob Reiner. And Rob Reiner plays himself in the movie. Now, quick word on that. This would have been coming in between. No, sorry. This would have come right after Alex and Emma. And so y'all can hear my dog eating in the background. You know, I'm not going to stop for him. He's just a little jerk. Alex and Emma, the Luke Wilson, Kate Hudson, romantic, time-spanning, romantic fantasy. It's not very good. And at that point, Rob Reiner had not really been good for like 10 years. I don't remember when the American President came out.
American President was like 96 or 97.
Okay, so never mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, he's a good sport. Obviously, he was an actor before he was a director. So it's like he acquits himself well as, you know, affable Hollywood big shot Rob Reiner.
He has that great line about a few good men that cracked me up pretty well.
he imitate. What would you like to say the line, Chris?
Oh, God. Well, it's when Dickie first goes to the office to meet Rob. He makes a fool out of himself in front of Rachel Dratch, and she buzzes him in. And then it's just a hard cut to Rob Reiner. He's like, so then Jack says to Tom Cruise, and, you know, in that Jack voice of his, hey, Rob, we ought to call this a few good men and one hot gal with big boobs. He said to Demi Moore. I don't know. Like, it's it's a pretty crass joke that Rob, you know, sells the hell out of. And he says with such glee. I don't know. It was my favorite line of the whole movie.
I really liked, we didn't mention it. This actually happens before he meets Rob Reiner. This is his way. You know, his agent, but played by John Lovitz, can't get him an audition. And he sneaks into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and talks with Tom Arnold. And I like the bit where Tom Arnold kind of snaps out and he's like, I can bench press 250 pounds or 350 pounds or whatever. And he's like, okay, like, yes, you can. He gets kicked out of the meeting for not being an alcoholic. And I guess he's like going to talk. He's trying to talk to like other actors to like help him get his foot in the door for like his big comeback and to get an audition with Rob Reiner. And he walks into what he thinks is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and starts like making a big about how he's a big alkie and a big drunk and like, you know, he's, you know, whatever. Like, they're like, well, sorry, this is a Lamaze class. And luckily Brendan Fraser, and not Fraser, but luckily Brendan Fraser is there with his wife. And he, former star of director Sam Weisman's George of the Jungle, does his director a solid and appears as himself, you know, at the height of his fame. This would have been two scant years after The Mummy Returns, and just a few scant months before Looney Tunes Back in Action sadly dented his star power. Justice for Looney Tunes Back in Action. And he's like, yeah, of course, like I'll get you an interview with Rob Reiner. There's a joke about how Dickie like hit on Brendan Fraser's wife like after they were married. It's a great bit. We discussed Rachel Dratch, who I love, showing up in. It was great seeing her in Click yesterday at the marathon.
Yes,
it was very fun seeing her in Dickie Roberts as well. And I always I actually did see this movie opening weekend in theaters, and I always remembered weirdly, like the main thing I remembered about the movie was the bit where she's like, hold the door. And Dickie does the like thing with his hands where it's like, he's like, oh, like, I'm sorry, I can't reach the button. I feel like I did that to a friend or two in college. Like, just as like, it's like, hey, hold that. I was like, oh no, sorry, I can't. The things that stick with us, the things that, you know, resonate in our innermost being. As that moment did for me. Yeah. So Rob Reiner tells Dickie, like, look, like my amazing script, Mr. Blake's Backyard, like I don't think I can hire you because you are not a real person and you don't have experience. Like, you would have to like, basically, like, he sets up the whole movie. He's like, basically you'd have to like, you know, like relive your entire childhood. And he's just like, wait a minute. Like, okay, I'll do that. And so he sells his memoirs for $30,000, And then he puts in like a personal ad saying like, hey, I'd like someone to like be like, take me in, like I'll pay $20,000 to someone who will take me in and like give me a childhood basically. And so that's the concept. Like that's the big high concept of the movie. And it's like Billy Madison, you know, obviously there's shades of like Joe Dirt where it's like, he doesn't really have a family. And so he's got to sort of find that out in the world. But he, you know, he has a few before he finds his forever family, spoiler alert, he, you know, goes through a few, you know, it's a process. And so he goes to one dude's house, like, who's just like a random guy, like in a shack. And he's just like, get back here. Like, you know, face the thunder or whatever he says. Like, he's just like, you know, it's a bad time for Dickie. And then he goes and sees an African-American woman who is named what? Sad-Eyed Sadie.
Yes.
Sad-Eyed Sadie, played by Retta.
Yes.
The star, a beloved star of Parks and Recreation. And that's very funny. And then of course, another man who tries to adopt Dickie is clearly just a gay man who just like wants to like hit on him. And this is played by Ian Gomez, the former Mr. Nia Vardalos, and co-star of the hit sitcom Norm, starring Norm MacDonald.
Oh, yeah. And he's funny on Norm, too.
He is funny on Norm.
He's also great on the television series Felicity. Back in the day when the name J.J. Abrams didn't, you know, like wasn't so loaded.
And he's got a great one scene cameo in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's nice. It's always nice to see him. Good for them. But then Dickie responds to someone responds to his ad and is like, you know, come live with me like in the suburbs, basically. And Dickie drives over to this house where the lovely Mary McCormick, playing Grace Finney, is unloading groceries at their beautiful, gigantic fucking house in the suburbs. And it turns out her husband, Craig Bierko, as, you know, George, he, like, basically invited Dickie to stay for the money without consulting his wife or his children. And they have two children, and there one of them is Sam, and the other is Sally. Sam is played by the actor Scott Tara. Chris, I believe you wanted to talk about Scott Tara.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I as we were joking as earlier, as I think all of us were watching this, this movie is very, very, very 2003 with some of its, you know, like Good Charlotte needle drops. There's there's a Harvey Danger flagpole sit-in needle drop. Anyways, this young man, you know, has like that very like, you know, kind of like bleached, like frosted blonde hair, kind of like going like in scenes where the kids are settling into like bedtime with David Spade, like this kid still has his hair all gelled up, like he's about to like get ready for school or whatever. So like that type of hair and like that type of era. Anyways, he looked vaguely familiar. And it turns out he played young Ben Affleck, young Matt Murdock. Is it Mark Stevens?
The director?
Yes.
Mark Steven Johnson.
Mark Steven Johnson's Daredevil. I was about to say, like Mark David Chapman, which is a different, fellow.
He's responsible for a different crime.
Different crime. So anyways, yes. Like the fake, you know, little brother character in here, Dickie Roberts, is also young Matt Murdock in the mid-aughts classic Daredevil. And I saw that movie a whole lot back in the day. I dug Ben Affleck, but I was all about his future ex-wife, Jennifer Garner, and was very stoked to see her in Daredevil. And anyways, yeah, there's a fun little, random roles moment there too, as I was watching Dickie Roberts, like, oh, that's the little blind boy who's discovering his powers.
Yeah. He had a great 2003. I loved Daredevil in 2003. And I saw Dickie Roberts opening weekend and I was like, my goodness, it's little Matty Murdock. But Jenna Boyd, the same year as this, was in the Ron Howard box office disappointment,
The Missing.
Oh, yeah.
Cate Blanchett and Evan Rachel Wood and Tommy Lee Jones. That movie is really bleak. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of like, I mean, it's not, obviously it's not as bad as like The Proposition or something, but like, it's a pretty like sad, depressing movie.
Yeah. I also was looking around and I found that she was also in that Netflix show, Atypical, which I had forgotten about that show. And
I'd forgotten about it too, but I remember hearing good things for like the week that it, you know, that it first premiered.
Huh. So what's Craig Bierko been in? That's okay. Craig Bierko. That's what I remember him. Speaking of Rob Reiner, he was the villain, very much so, in Cinderella Man.
Which villain?
The boxer he has to fight.
Oh, like Max Baer?
Yeah.
That's him?
Yeah.
Shit. Okay.
I really like, so I have not rewatched it in over a decade. I loved Cinderella Man in the
that movie's good.
2005. Like I saw it twice in theaters, and so like for years I've carried in my head that like that's like Ron Howard's like third or fourth best movie.
I don't want to be disabused
of that.
Yeah, like I think that's true. And you know, like politely setting aside like The Insider and LA Confidential, I think that's low key Russell Crowe's best performance too.
He's great in it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good movie. I would not have recognized Craig Bierko though. That is a good catch.
I loved him in Scary Movie 4. I feel like he was the new introduction. I think they had kicked out from 3. They got rid of Charlie Sheen.
Yes.
So that's where I like the name kept sticking out to me, and I was like, Craig Bierko. Oh yes, that was a very funny movie. In 2005 or 2006.
Yep, 2006. Please, sir.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we had Craig Bierko, you know, I don't know what he did in 2004, but you know, every year of my he was in something called Hair High. He was in For Your Consideration, the Christopher Guest movie. So Dickie is going to come stay with this family, even though Grace is sort of like, what? Like, you know, those characters from Grown Ups 2 would say, what? you know, she doesn't, she, you know, the kids aren't too stoked about it either, but Dickie is going to pay the money. And basically like George, the dad, just wants Dickie there, like to help him financially. And like, you know, he's like, you know, stuck in a, you know, in his job at like a car dealership. And like, you know, he's been married to his wife, his gorgeous, you know, cool wife, you know, for over a decade. And he's just like, you know, you're my ticket out of here, Dickie. Which like, you know, okay, sure. But yeah, basically, I don't know, like Dickie just like, he's a David Spade character. So he's kind of like a smarmy asshole to the kids. And like, he insists on putting a waterbed in their bedroom. Things like that. So like they like try to get rid of him by telling him to like go out into the treehouse. And he makes it into like they're like, okay, like we'll like keep him out of our house and out of our room by putting him in the treehouse. And then he like puts a disco ball and like a stereo in, and it looks like he's having a party, and the kids sneak out, and you know, suddenly they want to hang out with David Spade, like, or I'm sorry, with Dickie Roberts.
His like, endearing moment is like telling like scary stories up there, and then he has a tarantula on him, and I forget what happens after that. I'm sure it's like falls out of the treehouse.
Oh well, so no, it's funny. I did like that moment because they're telling scary stories, and David Spade tells the story. He's like, I got the scary story of them all, like the day they canceled the sitcom, and he's telling the story, and they see. It's a classic gag, you know, repeated in one of my low-key favorite comedies, Land of the Lost. They see something crawling on his back and they're reacting to that, but he doesn't understand. And he just thinks they're reacting to the story. He has a humongous fuzzy spider on his back. And he's just like, and then they said that the ratings were in free fall. They were at a 6-year low, like... You know, and like they had to do something, and they're screaming, and then, oh no, he has a spider on his back. And I don't think he falls out of the treehouse. I think they just like, you see him like running around, like their silhouettes and their shadows inside the treehouse. Yeah. What goofs, what japes. I think it's kind of interesting. One thing, I think Mary McCormick does a pretty good job in this role, in this movie, as Grace, as like the mother figure-ish. I do think it's interesting how, like, this isn't mentioned, obviously, but I think it's interesting how, like, explicitly, you know, we talk about the slumming love interest, and something we don't often, like, touch on is the fact that, like, you know, as always with, like, these movies, like, some of these Adam Sandler movies and others of these kinds, like, where it's, like, sort of slobs being slobs with, like, more responsible women, like, it's, like, the women are almost seen as, like, think about like Joey Lauren Adams in Big Daddy. It's like she's almost like a mother figure, like in addition to being like a romantic interest. Like she's sort of like the one who like straightens out the errant protagonist. And it's funny that it's so explicit in this movie. Like, it's just text here. It's just like, oh yeah, like she's my mom, but also like, I guess he has feelings for her. I mean, he definitely like, there's that funny bit where he's burping up root beer and he's like, he says, I want to bang your mom. And she hears him.
Yeah, it's somewhat unsettling, but it's fine.
Yeah. And, you know, he's like talking about how much he like likes her rack or whatever to her children. And they're just like, that's gross. You know, she's our mom. And he's just like, well, she's my mom, too. And I'm handling it somehow. And so, yeah. So Dickie, you know, he's just like, you know, it's your. You know what happens in this movie. It goes on your standard trajectory, like that you can imagine already. It's like, you know, he befriends these kids. He stands up for, you know, Sam, you know, has like trouble with local bullies. And, you know, he's on and on advice from Mary McCormick, he's dyeing his hair, you know, so that he can like make a clean break with his past. And like, because like a few times, like she wants to kick him out and he's like, you know, give me another chance. Like, let me try and, you know, prove to you that I can do this. And she's like, well, you should like dye your hair so that, you know, you don't get recognized as Dickie Roberts, former child star. And Dickie goes to like the school after like he's fallen asleep and like the dye has like fallen into his eye. Like it's like staining his forehead. And he like, you know, David Spade's superpower in this movie, the way that he expresses, you know, both scorn and empathy is his withering sense of, you know, like putting people down, like whether it's, you know, these school bullies who, you know, he makes fun of them, you know, for their weight and how they look, or whether it's, what's her name, that woman who is in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, who he puts down for her weight and how she looks.
And she's their neighbor, right?
She's the neighbor of the Finneys, and she's a real, you know what Kyle's mom in South Park is, and she is you know, real smarmy to them. And one really funny, I know we're jumping all over the place, but the movie, it's not like the movie is like a marvel of structure or anything. There's a really funny bit where the Finney's dog gets shows up with the neighbor's like bunny rabbit and it's dead, and they're just like, oh no, like we have to like put it back in its little outdoor pen, and they put it back in the pen thinking like, okay, like they'll, you know, they'll think it like died of natural causes in there. And this actually gave me a pretty good laugh when like the family comes home and they're just like, oh my god, like it's a devil rabbit, like We buried him in the yard 4 days ago. Like he died. And now he's back from the dead. And David Spade's like, that's a curse. That means that like the devil is telling you got to move out of that house, which they apparently do that very same day. Like you immediately cut to like a moving truck pulling out of the driveway, moving all their possessions. And then is that the house that Sam's new, you know, prospective girlfriend moves into? I think it is.
Yeah, because they're doing all those like things over the fence. So yeah, I guess that's the house.
They're doing the dance moves on the stilts. So Grace is an interior designer, or she wants to be an interior designer, and she gets like a gig. And she's like, oh, and like she, you know, they have like painters painting the house because the waterbed burst at some point. Yeah, we're really all over the place with this. But again, like occasionally we see John Lovitz, you know, we see him bumble along trying to get Dickie like an official audition with Rob Reiner, even though Rob Reiner told Dickie already that he doesn't think he's right for the part. One thing we forgot to mention is that early in the movie, Dickie is parking cars at Morton's Steakhouse or whatever, and he takes one car for like a joyride, basically. And he then insults a big like meathead dude. And it's just like, you know, just like being a real jerk to him, like David Spade is in like throughout the movie. And the guy's like, oh, like, don't worry, I'll find you. And he writes the license plate down. And like, you know, that doesn't come back for a while, but it's important context for later plot developments. Let's see. Yeah. So he helps the son with bullies. He teaches the daughter how to dance. Oh, here's something. They go to, they apparently live in the town of Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is this is the secret Cloverfield movie. I didn't see if J.J. Abrams was explicitly mentioned in the credits, but his hands or his fingerprints are all over this one. So I assume that the monster exists. I assume that John Goodman and that basement exist in this universe. So that's exciting. But he teaches the daughter like a dance routine for something at the Cloverfield Middle School or Lower School or whatever. And she, you know, she does a great job. After like the bully girl embarrasses herself. You know, it's all pretty boilerplate stuff, folks.
So I have something, I know that's going to be slightly out of the plot of the very complex plot. So I hope we can get back into it with this tangential question. How did I miss Peter Dante and Jonathan Loughran? Where are they in this?
They're filmed like at the very end where it's like Eddie Munster is singing on the We Are the World, not the like the We Are Child Stars on Your Television song over the credits. He's like, people on the street always ask me questions like, and this little video bubble pops up and it's Jonathan Loughran and Denny and Peter Dante like saying like, hey, like where's Eddie Munster? Like, you know, like, what's Eddie Munster up to these days? Or like, oh, like what's Herman Munster up to? Like that sort of thing. So like, I think like that's why the credit is themselves, because they just pop up in that video.
Okay, I did not watch the credits, which I should have stuck around for these credits. They put so much time and effort into them, but I just did not stick around for them.
Oh, that's a shame. Many critics, I think, said that the best part of the movie was the end credits.
Yeah,
not like that cutting joke. Like, genuinely thought that song was a good song.
And it's a really like well put forth effort of getting together these 30 people, all former child stars. So I will go back and watch it after this.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. I respect your integrity. You know, leave no man behind. I think it's funny that so the script that Dickie so desperately wants to audition for is called Mr. Blake's Backyard, and the things we hear about it. So Grace reads it at one point and sort of talks over it with Dickie, and kind of has to explain to him why it's like heartfelt and like, you know, devastatingly emotional and all that stuff. And I don't know about you guys, but like it's sort of pitched as like this is going to be like a major, like almost like a Forrest Gumpian type, like, you know, like Oscar popular hit. And to me, it sounds like at best, like a fucking bad Eddie Murphy movie from like 2010. It's like, oh, like a selfish businessman is building a big house and heaven's in his backyard, and the bigger the house gets, the smaller heaven gets.
Frankly, it sounds like a Rob Reiner movie, but like not from his 80s, 90s heyday. It's like a post-North Rob Reiner movie.
Yeah, it's post The Magic of Belle Isle. post-flipped Rob Reiner. Definitely post-Alex and Emma. So anyways, but he desperately, my God, he wants that part so bad. There is a really nice, so Cindy, Alyssa Milano, shows back up and she's like, oh, sorry, I was kidnapped by that hitchhiker. Like, she's basically doing the same maneuver as Linda, the traitorous Linda in, you know, The Wedding Singer, which is, of course, on all of our minds now because we just watched it yesterday. But, you know, Alyssa Milano comes back and is like, you know, can I stay here? And Craig Bierko is like, well, you know, we up your rent. Like, you know, we can definitely make that happen. And, you know, of course, she ends up running off with Craig Bierko, which is not, you know, that who could have seen that coming? Dear Lord. And then let's see what else. Like I said, the movie's kind of shapeless in a lot of ways.
He gets the role, right?
Yeah. So John Lovitz. I did like this. John Lovitz is like, hey, I got you an audition. And what happened was that it turns out that car that Dickie took for a joyride was Rob Reiner's car. And the guy tracked down Rob Reiner and like nearly beat him to death. You know, Dickie sees that, you know, on TV. And then and John Lovitz is like, hey, like I got you an audition. Like, you better be here to go to that audition because like he needs a new kidney and I gave him one of mine. You know, he goes to the hospital where Rob Reiner's about to undergo surgery, even though he looks totally fine. And they can even do like a cursory makeup job on him. I guess like all the injuries are like beneath his neck and chest. But he's like, Dickie's like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, why are you sorry? Like, it's not like you had anything to do with like that maniac coming after me for no reason. It's a great bit. Everyone roll on snare drum. Everybody laughs. He gets the part. Dickie emerges triumphant after getting the part. There is a nice moment, I guess, like right before that. There's a really, I have to say, as like sort of like Teflon, like lightweight as this movie is, like, you know, and kind of forgettable in the long run as this movie is, there's kind of a nice moment where, they show Dickie like a Christmas morning and the, you know, so like he comes down and it's playing like Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire, like that song. And, you know, there's like presents under the tree and it's like a, you know, it's like they're showing him Christmas. And something that I kind of like about it is that Spade, I don't want to like say too much here. I don't want to like seem like I'm like, you know, gilding the lily or anything like that. Like, it's not like it's like revelatory or anything, but I think Spade like plays the moment pretty well, actually, where he's like, oh, like, I don't actually like, I like, I guess you can't go home again. Cause like, I actually don't feel what I'm like supposed to be feeling. And like, I don't know. I kind of liked that. It was a tiny little moment of like, that complex. I don't know. Again, I don't want to like oversell it at all, but it was like, okay.
Like this is a movie that like for like it's comedic energy, it's emotional energy, like all of that, like it's pretty straight down the middle for most of its runtime. This is like a B minus or B movie that's content to be like a B movie, which is fine. That's kind of what I like about it. Just very low key charms. And then there's this scene without really underlying too much that kind of sneaks up on you. I agree. Spade underplays it, but he plays it well. And it's as simple as, and like, you know, like he gets Candyland for Christmas. And it's a movie that barely even tries to kind of go for that sort of emotional resonance. So it saves the one moment for this moment and it does it well. Yeah. I actually found that surprisingly affecting as well.
Yeah. And I think you said it well, just by that word underplayed, like it kind of the moment's a little bit underplayed. Like it's not like hammered too hard. It's just like, oh, this is a sweet moment. And you like the characters enough, like the vibes are good. What can you say? the vibes are all right. So, even though Craig Bierko has left the family, like Dickie is gonna like go, you know, he is gonna go off, but he decides to stay with the Finneys and decides to become, I guess, I presume he's gonna like try and be there like as an adult and not a child. But he did mention like wanting room and board for quite a long time, staying with the Finneys and Mary McCormick. So he's either going to be a dad to those children or continue to be a sibling, and that won't be weird at all. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I guess I just took away with it that they that the mom's like, okay, I'll date you, and it's just like.
That's her son, Austin.
Yeah, so it's got that weird thing going on that happens in Jack and Jill where it's Jack playing Jill, and then just that whole thing of like, what's happening now?
Yeah, it turns into like adaptation there for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really,
I mean, there's like a perfunctory reference to them getting married at the very end, but it's like, but what if he just like moved back because he found like a family? And that's enough. Like, you'd kind of, I mean, like, he has like nice, like warm, friendly chemistry with Mary McCormick, but you know, it's like, it's David Spade. It's kind of tough imagining him having romantic chemistry with anyone, unless it's like unless it's his grown ups character. And like, it kind of works that he's just sort of like the town slut.
unless it's Lauren Lapkus.
Well, yeah. That's a whole different thing.
All game. And so, yeah, over the end credits, we learned that Dickie, rather than taking the role in Mr. Belvedere's backyard, what was it called? Mr. Blake's backyard. After turning down the role in that, he starts a sitcom based on, you know, his exploits and like, you know, living with a family, you know, as an adult, like learning to be a kid basically as an adult. And he, in maybe the most, you know, the most auteurist touch on Adam Sandler's part as a producer, Dickie casts all his friends, in this sitcom and gives them all steady, cushy jobs in showbiz. And isn't that sweet of him? Isn't that the, you know, it was Jesus who said that, you know, like the greatest love that you can show for one, like a friend, is like, you know, laying your life down for them. But surely the second greatest show of love you can show to a friend is becoming rich and making all your friends like rich with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's, he's following the Sandler method there.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful vision of how things could be if we all were successful, you know, comedy entertainers.
Just re-looking at this, whenever I did see this is Corey Feldman, right?
Yeah,
I thought he was Mark McGrath.
I know. Corey Haim. No, yeah. It is Corey Feldman. No, both of them are in there. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's got those frosted tips, also of the era.
For sure. I did y'all notice Kevin Farley is the valet?
Mm-hmm.
Did you also? I had not seen him before as the guy who brings the hot dog over in Jack and Jill. There was the big screen. I needed to glimpse those details.
I think I did see it on that as well.
So yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it ends with after we learn what happened to Craig Bierko. Apparently, he gives Alyssa Milano. He gives Melissa Milano a guest starring appearance on the sitcom like Dickie's Gang or whatever, and she gets a spinoff. The character popularity of her one episode appearance leads to a spinoff called The Bitch Who Didn't Know She Was a Bitch. which I don't see that being made in like 2003 or 4, but like it's still pretty funny. That's a funny bit. And Craig Bierko loses his memory and becomes a Hare Krishna. And over the end credits, there's of course a We Are the World style ballad sung by all these former child stars and stars of like 70s and 80s TV shows. You got Willie Ames, Fred Berry, Todd Bridges, Gary Coleman, Jeff Conaway, Kanicki from Grease, Tony Dow, Corey Haim, you got Maureen McCormick. You got Butch Patrick, who I think is Eddie Munster. My dog's coughing in the background again. Poor bastard. Janie Bonaducci, Dustin Diamond. Yeah, you got all those guys. So it's a who's who of who that guy.
Florence Henderson's a little bit out of place here, but it's
yeah,
it's funny.
And I guess they couldn't get Penny Marshall. I guess they, you know, she was too much of a Hollywood big shot at the time. So yeah, that's all she wrote for Dickie Roberts, former child star. I did watch some of the deleted scenes, and Doris Roberts did come back at one point in the movie, but they cut that stuff out. It was basically like Mary McCormack, like, invited her to see, like, she reunites them at the end. But yeah, there's the DVD, as was the case in 2003, more often than not, the DVD is loaded. There are two audio commentary tracks. One of them is the director, and one of them is Fred Wolf and David Spade. There's a bunch of deleted scenes. There are like four or five making of featurettes. There's a Comedy Central special called Real Comedy, R-E-E-L. It's loaded. There's at least 3 hours of special features. So I highly recommend those of y'all out there. You know, if you're Dickie Roberts heads, definitely check this out. My dog is panting like crazy. One thing that's interesting about this movie, speaking of, you know, my tongue-in-cheek reference to Dickie Roberts fans out there, this movie is sort of notable for how little it's remembered, I guess. Like, you know, we already sort of mentioned that it had the ignominious, you know, achievement of being the, you know, the lowest grossing number one movie at the box office for like a long time, or maybe ever, who knows. But yeah, this is not, you know, Joe Dirt did garner a sequel eventually. Like, and people quote that movie all the time, or at least they did, you know, when I was in college. And, you know, obviously, like, his stuff with Chris Farley is beloved, but you even have, like, I mean, I think that, like even the Benchwarmers, like, there are people out there that I've seen who are like, oh yeah, I loved this movie when I was a kid or whatever. And Dickie Roberts, former child star, is definitely a movie that, again, you know, I saw it in theaters. I liked it just fine in 03. And it's like, rewatching it, you know, I'm mad. Like, it's totally pleasant.
Like, the next time I'm at Half Price Books and I see this for $5, I'm going to pick it up. I would do that.
Yeah, I feel like this movie never got the, I mean, what you see with, like, Joe Dirt, at least, is just the, kind of like the syndication of just seeing it over and over. I don't think I've ever seen this on a really, like, up front and center on a streaming platform. Maybe on, like, I watched it via Stars, but who watches Stars? But like, you never see it on Comedy Central. You don't see it on Paramount or anything. I don't know. You just don't see it anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I could see that kind of being, it just disappeared into the world.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know what, I think that might be an interesting point about, like, I never like really saw it on Comedy Central or in syndication like that. It never, you know, maybe it just like missed a window or like fell through the cracks somehow.
It got sued. So maybe that was part of it.
Yeah, for using the slip and slide. But a California court threw the lawsuit out. So, yeah, they used a slip and slide at one point in the movie to show Dickie what it's like being a kid. And he pours like Wesson, like grease or whatever, like all over it. And he like slides, you know. I thought it would have been funnier if it was like the bit in Christmas Vacation where he like lubes up the sled and it just like shoots like a rocket down the mountain. But no, unfortunately not. But no, I mean, like, this is definitely like I like the hot chick a lot, but like, and I hate to like keep returning to Rob Schneider as like a punching bag, but it's like, you know, if you get it like between like something like this and like The Animal, or frankly, maybe even like the first Deuce Bigelow, it's like, no, I'd rather watch something like, you know, like Dickie Roberts has more like to offer, you know, than that. Like, it's definitely like, you know, if it was a movie that came on TV a lot, I'd absolutely have like watched it more often. And so, yeah, like I said, it's not a great movie. It's maybe not, I know Chris will be, you know, we'll disagree here. And it's not like as memorable as something like Joe Dirt, like to me at least. Like Joe Dirt has, I would say that Joe Dirt has higher highs, but yeah, I don't know. I think Dickie Roberts is a perfectly pleasant little movie. And you know, in the grand scheme of Happy Madison, I think that's, you know, it should be,
you know, those of you out there, if you're taking the journey with us through the Happy Madison universe, you know, don't hesitate to seek this one out. It's actually fun. Like, I mean, like, don't break your neck to find it or to watch it or anything. Like, you know, if you don't feel like throwing a couple bucks, you know, don't worry about it. But it's a good time. Like I said, good vibes.
For sure. This was, yeah, again, I'll use the word pleasant, but like a pleasant surprise on this one. Low key Sunday afternoon charms, but you know what? Those have value too. So I'm into it. And I thought this was a very charming mode of Spade for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like Spade, just coming off the last one where we did all the Schneiders, I just feel like Spade is just easier to be around at this moment. Like, yeah, he's got just like a more likable quality. Even whenever he's just like punching people with insults, which is kind of his thing. it still works.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Spade is more like, Spade's kind of like, he's remained kind of constant and consistent. And I think that like seeing him now, it's less like, you know, I kind of think of him now as his Grown Ups 2 character. Maybe that's unfair to him, but like, I kind of like, that's how I see him now. So just like an old unmarried dude who's just like, whatever, like he's enjoying being a star. Like, who cares? Like, you know, he if he gets to make a Joe Dirt sequel, you know, years later, like, that's cool. Like, you know, he can like host the Bachelorette in Paradise, whatever it was called. My girlfriend was very excited about that, that David Spade was a host on that show. But, you know, it's, you know, this corner. So we have, so I believe, as far as David Spade goes, I think we have Joe Dirt 2 and then The Wrong Missy. So I believe Joe Dirt 2, and that's a big gap. That's a 12-year gap between David Spade. Because obviously Benchwarmers came after Dickie Roberts, but we've reviewed that one already. And that's a co-starring deal for David Spade. But as far as I can tell, let's see. Dickie Roberts, former child star. You know, he was obviously, he's in Jack and Jill and Grown Ups, and he's in, Joe Dirt 2 is really his next like solo starring role in a movie. So that's kind of interesting by itself. Like, just the fact that like Dickie Roberts was sort of like, you know, kind of like, you know, I wonder if like financially, if there was anything like going on with like Happy Madison, because it's like, you know, like the hot chick also sort of stopped. You know, that movie just sort of mildly underperforming, like just stopped Rob Schneider's like single. Well, I mean, no, he still had Deuce Bigelow too. So I'm wrong about that. But I tend to forget about Deuce Bigelow too. For some reason, that movie's wild. Anyways, I'm looking forward to watching Joe Dirt 2 for the first time. I've never actually seen that one. I've watched bits and pieces of it. And then after that, you know, we'll watch The Wrong Missy, but I also realized that we have some, you know, because that's a Fred Wolf joint, and we have a couple of Fred Wolf ones to sort of mop up that don't belong to any like one actor.
Right.
We got the House Bunny. I mean, like one actor who like we have like for a series. We have House Bunny and Strange Wilderness. I think those are the two. But
is Father of the Year, is that Happy Madison?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Oh, hey, right. So we got that as well. Good call, Austin. So yeah, so we got a little time left with, I mean, it's still Joe Dirt 2 first. Yes, Father of the Year is produced by Alan Coburn and Adam Sandler. That is definitely a Happy Madison joint. Looking forward to checking that one out too. That one sort of slips through the cracks as well. Maybe it's the Dickie Roberts former child star of its era. Spade's in his blue period. So excited to continue down the road with David Spade. I do, not to get too ahead of the schedule, I do think that depending on how the schedule shakes out, I think that it would behoove us, because, you know, we have a little bit of flexibility with the, you know, being in the far-flung corners of the Happy Madison cinematic universe. We should try and track down and watch that, the one horror movie that they made in like 2009.
Absolutely. That's gotta happen.
I think this is the year that we do it, because, I think it has to be. And so I'm looking forward to watching that. So we'll have, we'll continue with David Spade. So yeah, next episode will be Joe Dirt 2. And then depending on what we do with the schedule, it'll either be Father of the Year and then the horror movie, or the horror movie then Father of the Year. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe we do it before Joe Dirt 2. Well, TBD, folks.
And that horror movie being called The Shortcut. Yes. By Nicholas Goosen, who did Grandma's Boy.
Correct. So very, very, very curious about that. Oh God, I just noticed it in Joe Dirt 2. Adam Egget plays the character Buffalo Bob. Got Adam Egget in there. That warms my heart. So excited to check that one out. Excited to spend more time with Spade, excited to spend, to check out that horror movie finally. I've been, thinking about it for years. It's always been like we'll get to it eventually. And, that time has finally arrived. Yeah. And then at some point, as like I said, if you're here after, if you happen to hear about us for the first time at the show yesterday, thanks so much for coming out and thanks for listening. Tell your friends about this show. It's obviously just a huge honor to be able to talk about this stuff with you guys. And I'm glad that there's anybody out there listening and that, these sort of discussions are of interest to anyone else, like they are to us. I'm excited to dive into Kevin James. I'm excited to dive into, the House Bunny and Strange Wilderness and just see where this all takes us.
Absolutely. I'll echo that. Thank you so much again for showing up yesterday. If you did, and if you're listening, thank you so much for listening in general. And yeah, yesterday was special. I'm so glad we're continuing to do this, and yeah, let's bring on more adventures with Spade. I'm into it, my friends.
Yeah, this is yesterday was fun. And this was an enjoyable movie, so I'm looking forward to the rest of them.
Heck yeah! Well, we've yet to, I don't think we've yet gone into any, we've delved obviously quite deeply into Adam Sandler's direct to Netflix era, or direct to streaming era, we'll say, and Spade sort of predates him by a couple months, Joe Dirt 2 came out about 4 or 5 months before Ridiculous 6 did. I'm just curious to I'm excited to travel to uncharted territory with you fellas. That will do us for this episode of the Billy Gilmore podcast. Once again, thank you so much for listening. As always, I am Wilson Smith.
This was Chris Giles.
And Austin Colt.
And we will see you next time for most likely Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser.